So how would you like to meet your therapist as an avatar in a virtual world? A group of Belgian psychologists are cooperating with students from the Ritz Academy and the staff of Crew, which produces stage shows infused with technology, to create a program they call Soul Hacker. We talked to psychiatrist Georges Otte and Eric Joris of Crew about this potential new treatment for depression.
The idea of therapy sessions using virtual reality is fairly new. Is this correct?
Well, no, it exists already a long time because it has been applied for the treatment of phobia, like people who are afraid of speaking in public, afraid of heights, afraid of closed surfaces and things like that. And in a sense, it was an add-on to behavior therapy and progressive desensitization so that you could apply a stimulus in a very, very low anxiety generating form and then increasing it progressively while the patient is being relaxed and adapts to the stimulus. It has been used by the military in PTSD syndromes in Afghanistan, in Vietnam. That was one of the first applications. Thus, in a linear form, it has a long history in therapy.
How long has your team been working on the Soul Hacker program?
Soul Hacker is very recent. It originated from a conversation we had, Eric and I, on the possibilities of virtual reality. We're working together. They've been already more than 10 years. But I saw that in the Sundance Film Festival was a movie on VR which generated a lot of emotion. And I talked to the author and I said that emotion is very good in art, but we should also apply it in therapy because that's what psychotherapy is all about. It's about emotion. And now it's very cerebral. You talk to a patient, but it doesn't generate a lot of emotion. While in movie, music, VR, we could use emotion in a much more increased and a much more pronounced way. So we talked about this with Eric, and I had these experiences with Milton Erickson hypnotherapy, where they create a world in the mind of the patient and then adapt that world. But not every patient likes hypnosis, and not every psychotherapist is a good hypnotherapist. So we thought, why not using VR as a medium to replace the hypnotherapist, create a world that the patient can manipulate, that the patient can change, so that patient will have a lot more agency in his therapy than before. Because now psychiatry is a lot of about to do on medication. Patient take a pill that takes about 3 seconds, and that's it. What we want like to do is give agency to the patient so that he can really manipulate the environment, and we want to target this to depression, because in depression, the world of a depressed patient is very black, very rigid, and very, very icy cold, and there's no light, there's no vitality, there's no evolution. And if a patient can change that, then he will experience not only the darkness and the emptiness of depression, but also the possibility of a transfer and a transit, a dynamical transit, to a way of life, of light, of social improvement and things like that, so that in his emotional mind, there will be the idea of change is possible.
And this therapy has been used for phobias, and I also think pain management, but there hasn't been much done in the field of depression. Is that
no? There was only an attempt in Stanford University where they had a scene where a patient could speak to somebody who was in a dungeon, and they had to console him. And what the person said to that guy who was lying on the ground in chains, then they switched the roles, and he heard his own voice talking to himself. And also that generated quite an emotion. And a patient could say, well, if he spoke, somebody spoke like this to me or in another way. So that was a very first article. But for the rest, in depression, there's not been a lot of, there's been a lot in wellness and relaxation, meditation, Zen, a lot of applications, but not very much in depression.
you are in a research period or a sort of pilot project. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We are in a pilot project where we will use the technical abilities and the creative abilities of the crew. The crew is creative workers who are well known internationally for creation of really artistic virtual worlds. And we will use that, let's say, technology and know-how to create these worlds and change them according to the emotion that the patient will experience.
And this therapy has its roots in hypnosis. And I think when most people think of hypnosis, they think of a sort of stopwatch in front of their faces. How does hypnosis relate to virtual reality?
Well, hypnosis was only the model that we lent from Milton Erickson, because Milton Erickson was a very good hypnotherapist, because he used hypnosis in a very indirect way. Just by focusing attention on another point, will bring people in a more receptive state. So hypnosis is there really much more in a sophisticated way. And it will not induce the change directly. It will offer patient tools so that he can really change the environment himself or herself, give more agency to patient, give more, take into account the individuality of the patient so that he can really walk in the landscape and start changing it. And each patient will change it in a different way. So the challenge that we have to take care of is the measurement of the emotions and even sending a therapist into the virtual world in the form of an avatar. So that the therapist will see what images generate what emotions in the patient, and he can influence also. So it will be a dynamical game of therapist, patient, and environment.
When do you think, realistically speaking, this could actually be used to treat patients in Belgium?
I think 2 years. I think we need 1 year of setting up all the technology, because it's quite a challenge measuring emotion during a virtual reality experience. We need cameras in the headphone. We need heartbeat registrations. We need EEG, because we also want to prove that it helps. It's not only just realizing it. We also need to prove that it's better than, for instance, relaxation.
But at the same time, we can already start with doing it in simple ways. I must say, because you can well compare VR to a state of hypnosis, because we got this from the when we started in 2004 with our kind of VR, which was video based, by the way. People were walking around and were reporting really very strong states of emotion, also emotionally, and we didn't have a clue exactly where it came from. And then I remember that once we had a lady coming out who was in tears, and we had no idea why that was, because there was nothing, anything sentimental or emotional in the work itself. And then she came out, and when she calmed down, she said, yes, but actually I'm a hypnotist. And what you're doing is very close to hypnosis. So the way you slowly progress and talk to people, I must say people were walking around in a world which seemed to be their own world. It wasn't sure, but it was always a voice talking to them. So there was a very good actor with a very deep voice, slowly talking to them. And that brought a state of, which is like hypnosis then, I guess. So it is possible to get in a very close contact to people of a different type in immersion. So already on that level, you can progress with people, influencing them and doing something with their emotions.
And you're talking about a level of performance, actually.
The performances. That's what. Yeah, yeah. So we are artists. So we're in performances. Later on, because it was so strong, we also had psychiatrists, a neuropsychiatrist like George, and coming to see what was happening. But then I also remember that there was a child psychiatrist for children who suggested at a certain moment that we started using it for treating autistic children. We had made a kind of installation where you were not only being immersed yourself in an image, but you were, immersed in the world of the other, because you had a 360 degrees cameras up on your head. And so you were using the image of the other person. So you had to work out of the body of the other. So which is a kind of, I mean, you need a lot of empathy to steer the other person, because you need to help the other person in order to be helped yourself. I mean, it proves that you can have very strong impact.
Tell me how Soul Hacker works in practical terms. So a patient goes to a psychologist. They both wear a virtual reality headset. The patient is further equipped with medical sensors. What happens then?
Then he will walk into a world, first of all, in a large physical space. Movement will be, I think movement is very important because a lot of virtual experience now are people seating and things like that. No, we want him to move. But in that world will be another virtual world projected, which will be, in a symbolic way, the reflection of the depressive state, black, dangerous, anxiety-inducing, and things like that. And then this patient will, with the therapist, look for helping clues. For instance, what we did already was to let the patient find like green crystal balls. And when he threw the balls, when they broke, they generated the tree of light. So that the dark space gradually became enlightened and the threat of the dark disappeared. So it's always we try to embed into the emotional memory of the patient the idea that change is possible. Because I see a lot of patients who are in a very, very depressive way, and I have lost a lot of patients in a depressive way because they committed suicide. And they committed suicide because they were convinced that nothing could save them, that they were beyond. And it's always a struggle to convince them that they can be saved. I have now one who was treated, and he survived, and he enjoys again. And now he says to me, I can't believe that 3 weeks ago I was going to die. I was preparing suicide. We see that it's possible, but you have to convince the patient. And once they experience, if you talk to them rationally, that doesn't impact. But if they experience that change is possible, that's another story.
The images with the dark forest and the crystal balls, is that just one of many potential images that you'll be working on over the next few years?
Yeah, that's right, because there are many metaphors possible. Another partner are students from the Ritz, from the high school of theater, and they came up with another metaphor. So we will be able to create several metaphors. Once the clinical trials will start, we will also do EEG registration. We will look at the neuronal networks in the brain before and after the session. So a patient will be its own control to see if we can induce, if the session really induces changes and if these changes last. We're working with crew and we're working with students of Ritz so that we have artistic and medical expertise together.
So it's like a performance itself. So if we do performances like this, so this type of one-to-one performances where you walk as an immersant around in a world, so the actor will be talking to you and has quickly to grasp what kind of person you are. So it's a bit in reverse. Normally an actor is on the stage and does something to the audience, but here the actor first has to really get into the mood and the head of the person in front of him. And some actors are extremely good in it. So it's very much like a therapist. So you have to grasp quickly what kind of person he is. And I think based upon that, you will change the visuals or the material or the 3D, or there are some possibilities there. With the tests, it was remarkable to see that you don't need much to really have an impact on people.
If we're talking about individual therapy, there isn't going to be this technical artistic person involved in the therapy. So these things have to somewhat be automated, or that the therapist has to learn how to alter the visuals based on the biometric feedback?
Well, I think for the moment we are just in the development phase of an artistic medical project. Eventually, it's the goal to port this to the office of a therapist so that the therapist can be or in virtual reality or in a 2D flat screen like on his iPhone or on his tablet, follow the patient into the virtual world and look at the emotion. And then the project will be scaled down to, let's say, office space, so that a therapist can, in a clinic or in a private practice, use it as a tool to induce these emotions of change in the patient. Ultimately, the goal is to, if the project is proven successful, if it can induce that change, to port it to the real world, and so that it can be applied in therapy.
In Belgium, 1 in 4 people at some point suffer from a serious mental health issue, and the country is in the top 3 in Europe when it comes to the suicide rate.
I think there's a lot of pressure. I know some people in my direct environment who are a bit suffering, and I have no clue to why exactly, because they come up very caring, good families and things like that. But so I have the impression that there's a lot of pressure upon young people. Of what is being expected of you or something like that, or there is so many possibilities. Everything is possible. So how, I mean, it's, they were much more limited in our days. And so we had to do what our parents told us, things like that. But I think there's a lot of pressure, right? So much is expected and everything is possible. Go
I see
ahead.
It in my profession. I see a lot of colleagues who are in a depression, who are in a burnout. A lot of 40% of the doctors doing a burnout. And a lot of these people, they went into medicine. Most of them were idealistically. Yeah? They want to help people, for helping people, caring for people. And they are having, there's so many factors that deter them from that goal, from the core business. They have to do administration, they have to do registrations, and they have to use computer programs. They're not very well suited to do that. And I see that a lot of people, the satisfaction they get from their profession is going down. And that causes a lot of burnout. And I know a lot of good doctors who are really disgusted with all the administration and the rules and the controls that government puts on them, and restrictions more and more. And that is a heavy contribution to burnout, and from burnout, depression. I have many, very good, promising doctors who committed suicide. It's such a shame. Last month, I had a colleague, he was 40 years old, he had 3 children, and he killed himself. And they don't accept help. Eh? If you ask them, nowadays I'm very direct. I go to them and say, I see that you're not doing well. Can I help you? No, everything okay. In the academic world and the research world, I've been a lot in research, and I had a friend who was a very professor in neurology, and he came to me and said, wow, I'm so happy. I said, why are you happy? Oh, I had an article in Lancet, and now that counts for so many points, and now I have 1 year that I don't have to write 2 articles a year. Oh my God, I said, but you write an article because you discovered something, not because you have to. I said, no, in our world, we have to write 2 articles a year, but that's the end of my career.
I don't know. So I can't put really the real finger on it, but I noticed with the younger children when they grow up. So if I saw it to my own daughter, so who's very good, has lots of possibilities, but the fact that they have to choose at a certain moment what they're going to do in life, with all the possibilities they have and all the things they see, and they see it all much better than we did, it's a stress factor. Whereas for us, that was a liberating kind of thing. So like all the kind of things you would be able to do. I feel there's a general mood like that. So there's a lot of expectation in our society.